know, again, I've said before, fully confident in Cole. It's the reps that he needs to create these calluses that you get when you're young and trying to grow in a position, and being out there is how you get that experience.
Bills head coach Sean McDermott. If you watched Hard Knocks last night, want to give us a ring? You can. We got Josh and Dion singing Panic at the Disco along the way.
Yeah.
That's cool. We got Josh and the quarterbacks breaking down their throwing motions with 3D biometric tracking. That was very cool.
Zach Davidson biking through the woods, where I immediately asked, like, where is that? Is that like his?
Yeah.
Or is he going somewhere for that? Because that looked cool.
Davidson punting. New rule. Can we make a rule? Everybody, who doesn't want to sign up for this? Every team in the preseason must have a position player attempt a kick and a punt. We got great stories.
Preseason.
Ray Davis made a kick.
Yeah.
Zach Davidson had a punt, 62 yards.
62 yards. Yeah.
When they showed the highlights of him in college, he went to like the small Missouri school.
Yeah. As a punter.
Yeah. He went to school as a punter. So he got a scholarship as a punter.
Yeah, Central Missouri.
Central Missouri. And they show the highlight of him turning into a tight end. And I just picture that meeting, or however it went. Maybe it's a conversation to have with Zach Davidson sometime. You had to convince them to let you be a tight end. You're a giant human being that runs very fast.
Yeah.
They weren't convinced. No, this kid can kick the ball. He says he wants to play tight end.
Yeah.
He looked like a freak athlete.
Yeah, as a redshirt freshman, looks like he just punted, set a school record, finished second in the nation with 44 yards per punt on 47 punts. He was named second team, whatever conference his team was in.
Can he be the first punter to also be his own gunner? Like, kick it and then go
run down his own kick.
Yeah, just call
That's
plays
those...
where the line, like, opens up. Like, we got to get Zach down there for this hit.
Well, that'd be one of those where, like, you know, a returner sees the punter, like, on. He's like, oh, man, I'm going to light this guy up.
Right.
And in this instance, it's, oh, man, here comes the punter, who is 6'7", 255, heading straight for you. Yeah, it looks like then that second year he started playing tight end a little bit. But even then, he only caught 11 passes. So maybe you should try being an NFL punter.
I mean, listen.
Again, you'll have the advantage of him running down a punt as the last man at 6'7", 250 will terrify returners.
What
I
else,
like it.
What else happened on Hard Knocks? Anything else out there? A little bit of a lot of KJ Hamler and what he's what he's been through. And
his career was really
Allen referred to Hamler
derailed.
As one of his favorite teammates. So is Hamler sticking on the practice squad? Sticking around? He might not get another opportunity.
I'd like to see him. I mean, I like players like that. I mean, he's smaller and super fast. I don't know if he's fast when he entered the league, because it wasn't just the heart condition that he had. He had injured hips and torn ACLs, and he had a ton of stuff. Because he was an early second-round pick, and then didn't do a lot in his rookie year, but, you know, 56 targets. He was at least a part of the offense. And then it was just over. Like, heart condition, injuries, bam, career's over, and he hasn't really played in the league in 5 years. So it'd be cool if he made a difference at some point, but I don't know. If he'll come back.
Just made a request to Josh to look for something we used to have. Because as we're talking about all these, like, you know, guys that made teams, there's a lot of it about the Bills. There's one in Kansas City that's interesting.
That made the team?
Made the team, and it's a callback to, do we have it? We don't have it? Okay. Do you remember, was it the Patriots? It couldn't have been the Hurricane game. It was one of those times the Bills just murdered New England.
Okay.
And did we stop doing this? I think we stopped doing this now that Belichick's gone. Listening to the post-game show?
Maybe.
It used to be fun. You know, the Bills win 38-9. Let's pop a little EEI on.
Like the night when Belichick threw the phone at the wall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there was one post-game caller that ranted and raved and ranted, Tyquan Thornton! Tyquan Thornton! That's your answer, Tyquan Thornton!
Yes. Wait, was it him or was it...
I thought it was Tyquan Thornton.
Who was it? I want to say it was a running back.
Maybe. I thought it was Tyquan
Thornton.
I'll
have to find it.
Tyquan Thornton made the Chiefs.
Oh, okay.
He made the roster.
Right.
So
second round pick?
Yeah. And for what it's worth, like, if you want to do a quick little one team versus the other team, what are the Bills versus what are the Chiefs? The Bills want to be power football. And the Chiefs, who have, you know, succeeded against the Bills, they want to be speed. They want their track team back.
Yeah.
They draft Worthy. The Bills draft Coleman. Like this, you know, we can compare those two, what they are. Coleman's not fast. He's strong, bully. Worthy is small speed. Tyquan Thornton is about what?
Straight line speed.
So Thornton and, I mean, Rice is their big bodied guy, but Sky Moore's done. That's a second round pick for the Chiefs. And instead, it's a former New England second round pick. Tyquan Thornton, he has made the 53 with Kansas City.
Okay. They do have a lot of receivers like that.
Yeah.
A lot of receivers like that.
I saw Worthy talking about it there in Kansas City. Mahomes talking about it as well. They want their big play passing attack back. And one of the things league-wide, Joe, has been the league kind of sitting down, squatting down on no more big plays for the Allens and the Jacksons and the Mahomes. You're not going to throw it over top of us. We're not going to let you do that anymore. And they all had to kind of evolve. And Kansas City is kind of leaning into,
yeah,
we want it back.
The player was not Tyquan Thornton.
Who was it?
Sorry to inform you. It was Ty Montgomery.
Ty Montgomery.
Yeah, I'll find the clip.
That's right.
It is.
All right, not Tyquan Thornton.
Gold.
Either way, Tyquan Thornton was a failure in New England. It was like a story about how that did not work out.
And it was a story about, like, it really was the last example of Belichick cannot draft wide receivers.
Right.
Just has no capability of doing it.
You're right. It was Ty Montgomery.
It's like the best. It might be my favorite sports radio call of all time. He's so mad about Ty Montgomery signing with the Patriots.
Well, I mean, that's when you're going through it. That is one thing we are potentially losing here, is that with Vrabel and respectability, we can no longer just relish in them freaking out. Like the Dolphins. It's fun to watch the Dolphins flounder.
That's happening a lot right now.
Do the Dolphins get that call? It feels like they might. But there's something special about a New England fan who's just won for the last 20 years mad. That fueled my soul.
Well, because I think the difference, and this is a lot in reputation, but I bet it also is in practice, that when the Patriots are bad, New England yells about it. Like Boston, they stew in it, and they're angry, and they will sweat. Like, just they lose their minds. Miami, I feel like the reputation is they'll just check out, right? Fans, the stands will be empty. They'll go on to other things. They'll go on to the Heat and Miami football. Like the University of Miami football. That to me is more the reputation of Miami. And maybe I'm just doing that because they'll go to the beach, right? And it's the climates and it's whatever. But no, I don't know that you'll get that call about Miami. You will definitely get that from Boston. And you'll get it from New York, right? Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, this year I think the Dolphins are the team that is ripe for that. I've wondered, I heard Mike make this point in the afternoon show yesterday. Like, I almost wonder if it's too much. Like, too many people think the Dolphins are going to be terrible. That, is it right to start swinging the other way? Like, okay, like, are they going to win three games? Because that's kind of how it sounds. No, it sounds like people think they're going to win 3, 4, 5 games. And maybe, are they going to win 8 or 9 again for, like, the fifth year in a row?
Well, as part of, I heard Mike talking about this yesterday, too. And one of the things in there was the exact AFC finishing order, AFC East, which you can bet the exact finishing order, first, second, third, and fourth.
Okay, right? Like,
you know, the odds the Bills finish first are strong. And they have every single Bills. There's only one scenario where, and this is maybe interesting to you, one scenario where it's out of order. So how many different ways could the Bills win the division? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 5 straight most likely finishing orders are the Bills in first. And then there's one more in there that comes New England and then the Bills. So basically, the sixth most likely, according to the odds, is New England, mm-hmm, Buffalo, Miami, the Jets. And the one Bills one that comes in below that is the Jets in second.
Woo!
Yeah. And Miami third. What I'm getting at there is, like, Miami in fourth is, it'd be tough to imagine them being worse than the Jets. I saw something from Aaron Glenn, where this is one of those, does a coach have to say this when he's building a culture? Does a coach have to say this when he's talking about Justin Fields as his quarterback? Aaron Glenn basically poo-pooed the idea of passing being important. Look at the teams that pass the ball versus teams that run the ball. And 300-yard passers don't win a lot. You know, the whole understanding game script.
Yeah.
And is your head coach really that clueless about how important it is to pass? Or is he saying that because that's the message he has to deliver in a first year when you're establishing, you know, you're the Jets. Yeah. You're trying to change everything around.
And you also don't have
a passer.
No, you have a, you have an offense that looks like it's ready to run the ball a ton. And I mean, they have Garrett Wilson, but
after that, it's
name
nothing.
Me another player they're going to throw the football to this year.
Oh, after Garrett Wilson, they have nothing.
From a quarterback who, by the way, like, you know, he starts 15 games for the Bears in 2022. How many yards? 2,200.
Yeah, it's horrific.
Like, it's not a quarterback you're going to expect a high volume from in the first place. So, I can't decide what I think of what's going on there. I feel like he is trying to do parts of what Dan Campbell did, right? Like, he's trying to turn around, you know, respectability there, and, like, he thinks it was a mess in New York, which it was.
It was.
It was a mess. And he's trying to turn that around, but when he's referencing the Eagles winning the Super Bowl and, like, he's stopping a reporter mid-question about how it's a quarterback-driven league, like, all right, you got to know that it is a quarterback-driven league to some degree, right, dude? Like, for him to stop a reporter mid-question and make a correction of, oh, the Eagles win the Super Bowl by running it.
Right. They're
when everyone quickly pointed out, like, the Eagles were sixth in, like, all the passing metrics.
Right.
Like, they were number one, but they were sixth. Like, don't make it sound like they had a bottom five passer in the league and won because they were ground and pound. Like, they also had an amazing pass offense, which, by the way, is what won them the Super Bowl at the end. The run game helped, and Kansas City, you know, buckled in to stop Barkley, but they've dared Hurts to make the passes, and the quarterback made the passes. So he kind of sounded like he hadn't watched the Super Bowl.
Right. 803-0550. Steve in Albany. Hey, Steve, good morning.
Guys, how are you this morning?
Excellent.
Hey, so I just finished this morning watching Hard Knocks, you know, before heading to work here. And I don't know if you guys talked about this morning or not. I'm kind of catching up with your show. But I found it very, very interesting that Trey White was completely, and I feel like purposely, omitted from this week's episode. And I think it's actually a positive, and here's why. I think this regime, since McDermott and Bean came on board, and particularly McDermott, they are very coy when it comes to injuries. They have a tendency to just kind of shy away from it. It's kind of Belichickian in a way that they feel like it's almost an advantage to not say anything and almost sound as though, like, somebody is not going to play. Like, I remember they did it with Josh in the past with, like, his hand, and it was very, like, murky what was going on with him. And several other players in the past. And I just think it's encouraging that you're not hearing much. I think it's encouraging Trey White's on the 53 and not on the IR. Like, everything points to this isn't as serious as originally thought. And I think another feather to the cap was Hard Knocks just completely omitting the whole Trey White situation. I didn't know if you guys felt the same way.
Well, the only thing from Trey White in the Hard Knocks episode, I don't know. I mean, Hard Knocks isn't, you know, choosing to air storylines about whether a player is hurt based on, I don't know, I don't necessarily buy that. The thing in the episode was about how Trey White is an example for Max Hairston. They're in the defensive backs meetings room, and Hairston's talking about with the defensive backs coach, like, what did Trey, tell me what you said about Trey. And he said, you know, he's a 10-year vet or whatever, and he's still upset after a bad rep because that's the level of professionalism that he brings, basically, like, to paraphrase. Hairston said, I took away that he has a bad rep in camp, and here's a guy that's done a lot in this league, and he's thinking about it. Like, that's how dialed in you've got to be.
Mm-hmm.
On the whole idea that the Bills are coy with injuries, I think it's kind of standard what they do. I could be wrong about that, but the league, and especially with the getting in bed with gambling, there are rules. You've got to follow the rules. If a guy gets treatment, it gets reported that this player is on the injury report for getting treatment.
Right.
So I don't know how much you can finagle that, how much you can say questionable versus, I mean, they removed probable from the injury designations. The league did a couple years ago.
Yeah.
So you're only questionable or you have no designation. But if you get treatment, you're on the injury report. I feel like that's something we learned from Sal over the years, right? Hey, look at this lengthy list. All right, no injury designation. That means the guy's getting treatment for something, but he doesn't have a designation. So I don't know how much you can be coy. I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just not sure what the Bills can do with it without getting in trouble.
Which can happen, too. The Niners got investigated last year when they didn't tell anybody that Christian McCaffrey was injured, and then it was like the morning of the game, like, oh, he might not play tonight. And then he didn't play for...
a month? 2 months?
Yeah, 2 months. And he went to Germany to get, like, treatment or whatever. That would be an example of other teams are doing it. I mean, San Francisco, I don't think they got found of any wrongdoing, but they got investigated. And I don't remember the Bills ever being investigated for something. I don't think it would shock me, though, that like if they had planned on something Trey White involved in Hard Knocks, that the Bills would have said, hey, maybe leave him out of this episode because we're within 2 weeks of the Ravens game and we don't want them having any indication of whether he's playing or not.
Maybe.
I don't think that's impossible.
I don't think it's impossible, but...
They do it in every other facet. Why wouldn't they do it with Hard Knocks?
Sure. What would Hard Knocks have showed? That he got hurt?
Would they want to, like... you know, get in the treatment room and like show like what that's like, and the Bills like, no, you're not doing that.
I mean, are they doing that with Tylon Grable? Are they doing that with...
No, but they might do it with White because he's a player that they've already featured and that some would know on the team.
Maybe. I mean, Deion Dawkins...
I'm just saying, if they wanted to do it as a show, I think the Bills would tell them no.
Dawkins got featured and they didn't go in on his back flare-up.
No.
I mean, it's anything is possible, I suppose. I don't want to rule that out, but... I don't know. I just don't know how interesting Trey White's thing is. And again, what has Hard Knocks been? We talked about it to open the show today. I feel like without having full knowledge of every single season of Hard Knocks, the way that this season runs looks like it's a redemption tour for Hard Knocks where, hey, if you let us in, we'll make your team look cool and adorable.
Yeah.
Like you'll love every player. You'll want Jimmy Charlo to make the team and KJ Hamler to make the team. And when guys get cut, it's... it's a commercial for the NFL, which is why, you know, some of the Shouty Show people are mad. They want endless controversy, and the reality is Hard Knocks, for what it's worth right now, is doing the NFL a favor by making a lot of these players look human, look in the human side of it, which a lot of these players, you know, are good people. So, I don't know. Thanks for the phone call, Steve. 803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550. Rivalries uniforms tomorrow. Let's have a leak.
Yeah, we haven't had a single leak about anybody anywhere.
I don't even have to be the Bills. Give me a leak. Do you guys want to draft which organization is going to leak it?
Ooh. Who's the most leakable franchise?
AFC East. Hey, Mike Vrabel's out
NFC
there talking.
West.
Mike Vrabel's openly talking about finding the rats that are giving the information away. So
they could have done that.
New England's the number one pick. Seattle. It's the NFC West and the AFC East.
Yeah.
Which team's going to leak it? Rams? Cardinals?
The Cardinals seem like a leaky franchise. Yeah.
Somebody's got to
leak it. Arizona. That's my guess.
All right, you're taking Arizona.
I'm going to take Arizona to leak something. Yeah.
Not the Niners? We need a leak. Is there anything on Reddit? Come on. Reddit's what this stuff is for.
This is what Reddit is for,
leak.
Right? Yeah.
I want a rivalries uniform. I don't want to
get TMZ on the case.
I don't want to wait till tomorrow. I want to leak now.
They're busy with the Kelce Swift thing, I think.
That's big news.
Yeah. Now we can retire.
Sure.
Everyone's takeaway immediately. I saw on Twitter. Like, oh, that means he's going to retire soon.
Listen, if you want the, I feel like the line is, oh well, good. At least he'll get a ring this year. Because he's not going to get the other one.
But you can't. It's hard to make that joke.
Let's make
the
joke.
Guy who's won three.
Let's make the joke. I do think he's going to have a big year in fantasy. I think he's going to be back.
Do you?
I do. I think he's
going to
be back.
I am opposite of you on that.
All right. I think he's going to be back.
How much do you think they're throwing him the football?
Plenty when they have their speedsters run by everybody because they're committed to opening the field up.
He had 133 targets last year. I bet that goes down by 50.
I think he's going to have a good year. On that, there's only one negative about that giant announcement, and it's not an actual negative. It's a kind of a fake one. It's that now the people that relentlessly think the entire league is fixed for the Chiefs have a new they have a new angle.
There was like a few months early on where people were wondering like that their relationship was fake as like a way to draw in viewers for the National Football
League. And now it's real to draw in viewers.
Insane in the first
and now
place.
They'll fix the the whole thing. They're going to fix the league. Like, great, great. The fix is in, folks. Have a new angle. Let me tell you, it's terrible for all of us. Kyle Brandt has tweeted he's on his way here to Buffalo to see a tall friend. So he's going to meet with Tage Thompson, I believe. No?
Greg Rousseau?
Right. Josh, is he going to get info on the tall Buffaloes? Maybe.
Who? How many people could qualify as that?
The tall person in Buffalo?
Could be Spencer Brown.
That's right.
He actually might be the tallest on the team. I think he's taller than Rousseau. He's probably talking about Josh, right?
Maybe.
Yeah.
Shouldn't every major city or NFL market have a tallest person in town? We should all just know who that is.
Who the tallest person in Buffalo is?
We should just know that.
Do you think Spencer Brown might be the tallest person in Buffalo?
No.
No? You think there's somebody taller? Isn't he 6'9"?
Yes, there's somebody 6'10".
You think there's a 6'10"?
There's a
7-footer in Buffalo?
Does that mean does UB have a 7-footer on the team?
I saw a stat once that like 28% of 7-footers in the United States play in the NBA.
Okay.
Which makes me think that there isn't a 7-foot person in Buffalo.
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast, when we return here on WGR.
He's low, but it's weird. Like, you look at him like, oh, he's just going to be straight power. But the way he gets off the ball and he can get his hips through, and like he turns into like almost, I don't know how to say it, but like a little ballerina almost. And like the way he's able to move his body around, it doesn't make sense how big he is. He's able to move like that.
Yeah.
And so like he's able to quickly get upfield and does a great job in the run game, like swimming past people or just, you know how you do like arm over, like if you're getting beat on outside zone, you arm over and pull him up the field.
Right.
He does that on defense and it's great to see that. Like he watches us and does our moves against us too.
Bill center Connor McGovern on Deion Walker.
He's had a really good preseason. I asked Joe Marino this exact question. Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast, joining us here on the Western Hotline. Joe, good morning. Jeremy and Sneaky Joe here. I asked you this question last night on the Bills Squad show. Could it have gone any better for Deion Walker, the fourth round pick who came in with, you know, injury concerns and some potential red flags, but here we are. So anyway, good morning. And if you want to start there, I liked your answer last night. I think it's a good start.
Yeah, good morning, guys. And yes, it's been a really, really good start for Deion Walker. Obviously didn't have the 2024 campaign that he was looking for. And then we later find out that there's a back injury and you're kind of wondering how is that going to impact the rookie season. And he was off the rep entering training camp and he's been full go. And it's been exciting to see. He's certainly come in and maximize the best parts of his game, which to me are the movement skills, obviously, for the size. Then he's just got a lot of upper body power, whether it's with his hands or just the amount of mass he has up top. And you kind of blend that together, and he's maximizing that right now to beat these blocks. And one thing that's been really consistent with Deion Walker throughout his entire football journey is that he's got a really good nose for the ball. And so it's working for him right now. I love where he's headed. And I think the next challenge for Deion is, you know, the reality of, all right, you're going up against starters now.
Yeah.
In the preseason, he's playing backups for the Bears, Giants, Bucks, and he made them look silly. And that's exactly what you wanted to do. But the challenge gets tougher. And obviously, I think it's really competitive when you think about the snaps behind Oliver and Jones. And I'm curious to see how Walker slots in and between him and Sanders and Carter and, you know, can those guys keep Phillips on the practice squad? It's a good little competition brewing there, and I'm excited for where Walker's trending.
You know, between Walker and T.J. Sanders and Maxwell Harrison and Cole Bishop, I was mentioning to Joe, one of my takeaways from last night from Hard Knocks was a very small little comment McDermott made when he's at the round table at the hotel in Tampa with Tracy McGrady and Vince Carter, the minority owners for the Bills. And he kind of said something that they just moved right on from, which was, you know, we got some young players we're going to need a lot from, or some version of that. And Joe, kind of struck me that that's probably on McDermott's mind a lot, that this defense, it's going through this change, and a lot of its success might come down to the kind of contributions they get from their first and second year guys. I mean, I almost want to include Bishop in the group as a first year guy, but like How much of their success do you think will come down to needing someone that's one of the young guys to make a big difference?
Yeah, I think it's important. And actually, Sean mentioned this, I think it was at the owner's meeting, where he was at a round table taking questions from media. And he talked about, hey, the reality is we're going to be kind of young on defense. And so it's probably eating up at Sean McDermott, who, you know, I think he likes guys that he can trust. They're going to go in and do their 1-11th. And now he's got to rely more than ever on young players. And obviously, it's going to define so much of where this defense is heading. I mean, the reality is, if you look at defensive tackle, Oliver and Jones, Oliver will play 60 to 70% of snaps. Jones will play around 50%. There's a lot of snaps that are going to be filled by Carter, Sanders, and Walker. And those guys have a combined 315 NFL snaps. And all of those are Carter's last year. And so those guys are going to have to step in very quickly and fill their roles and provide an impact. And obviously, you know, that's huge for the overall success of the defense. But specifically this defensive line conversation that's been going on for, you know, closing in on 9 years of, can these investments fulfill the promise that they're supposed to? And let's hope this crop does it, because there's a lot of black eyes when it comes to D-line investments, and these guys need to pan out.
Yeah, I wonder if you think like Baltimore is like the biggest challenge they could have also right out of the gates without Ogunjobi and Hoyt, that defensive line. And I think calling back to Joe, some of the things that you had concerns about with Walker specifically, and me wondering like if this Baltimore matchup is like the perfect challenge for those things with him.
Yeah, it'll be a good test. I mean, I think about the foil of interior offensive lineman that he's going to face, where their center, Tyler Linderbaum, one of the best three or five centers in the league, but smaller, you know, pushes 300 pounds when he's soaking wet, and he can really move, and he's a technician, and he's an outstanding football player, but he doesn't really come with much size. Contrast that to their right guard, Daniel Faalele, who might be 400 pounds. You know, so that's going to be, you know, Godzilla versus King Kong in those matchups. And so he'll be stressed in some different ways. And, you know, he'll be able to show the technique and where he's at. I mean, he's going to play. They're going to need reps. And look, Baltimore showed up last year with 200 rushing yards in every game, it feels like. And it's a unique challenge because of Derrick Henry and Lamar Jackson, but also they have contrasting players with that offensive line that can challenge you with athleticism, can challenge you with power and mass. And so learning on the job real quick here. And, you know, that's the thing about Baltimore week one is I don't think it's going to be a great representation of where the Bills defense is actually going or how it's evolved. That's not going to be a good measuring stick, but it will be a week-long conversation regardless of how it goes. But you know, I don't, that's such a unique opponent that stresses every team in really unique ways that I don't think it's going to be a great measuring stick. But I know the inevitable conversations that we'll be having until week two against the Jets.
It'll be an important game regardless of how the teams look. Joe, looking over the roster altogether, like it's not one of these years where we had a big roster surprise in the initial 53, and that might really be because of the four decisions they didn't have to make, right? Michael Hoyt, Larry Ogunjobi, Maxwell Hairston, Tylan Grable. So maybe the surprise comes in 4 to 6 weeks. Injuries, of course, could factor in there. How do you feel like they're going to figure out the guys that are on the bubble, like the first four out once those four come back?
Yeah, it's really fascinating. And I think right now, my immediate question is, all right, Sam Franklin, are you a practice squad signing or are you an active roster player? And where, if it's an active roster player, where does it come from? And I think of three things. One and two is Jordan Hancock and Trey White. Could those be players that they put on injured reserve? Now, remember, you can only put two players on injured reserve on cutdown day, and the Bills did that with Grable and Hairston. Are they going to put one of White or Hancock on injured reserve? I think that's a possibility. Or could they just trade or cut Elijah Moore? And because the Bills are a little heavy at wide receiver, kind of where compared to where we expected that to be. So if he's on the active roster, you know, then I think it becomes even more complicated. But kind of my approach here is you look at the way that this Bills season stacks up. You have Hoyt and Ogunjobi that are suspended for 6 weeks. And so you play 6 weeks, you have a bye, then you come out of the bye and you face Carolina. I think that first 6 weeks is going to be a big evaluation period, and I think you will see some big changes on the 53 coming out of that. Of course, because you're bringing back Hoyt and Ogunjobi, but I can see Grable and Harrison being on a similar timeline where, you know, Harrison has this really interesting situation of we got to get the knee right, but we also got to get ready to play. And so, I think they'll want to take their time there. And that sweet spot feels like coming out of the bye into the Carolina game. And then with Grable, I mean, usually when concussions linger, they linger. And it feels like that's what's happening here. I don't know that it's a strategy to get Chase Lunn on the roster or not, but point being is I think there's 6 weeks of evaluation and there's going to be some decisions to be made. Obviously injuries will take care of it, but the reality is some of these guys are going to perform well and some aren't. And from there, I think there'll be the opportunities to get some of these guys back on the roster.
What do you expect the corner room to look like when Harrison walks back into it, and especially first couple games? We don't know about Trey White yet. Maybe you think Dane Jackson being released is a good sign for him. If he's going to miss any time, Joe, how do you feel about their current corner room, not including like maybe Levi Wallace signs the practice squad, he's maybe in town, but the guys they have on the roster right now, if they had to replace Trey White?
Well, what's interesting to me about Harrison compared to every other corner that they have not named Christian Benford is how uniquely different they are. You know, Maxwell Harrison's this super explosive athlete with big-time ball skills but a little undersized. That is not the case for any of these other guys. They are average athletes, and they profile more as like true zone players. And I think this Bills defense is going to want to be a pressure-oriented defense where they're sending 5- and 6-man pressures consistently, and that's going to put these corners in situations where they are one-on-one. There's a lot of real estate, and they're counting on the rush to get there and hurry throws and, you know, for these quarterbacks to not be able to work matchups. And so Harrison's so fundamentally different, and I feel like he's an important piece of this defense being what they envision it to be with this new direction and Ryan Nielsen's influence. So I wonder how it holds up stylistically without that skill set across from Christian Benford. And so I think they have to maybe play a little bit differently, and I do wonder what it looks like. And you know, it's about marrying that rush and that coverage and how they complement each other. And I think it's going to be unique this year, but I think that skill set that Harrison provides really unlocks what this defense is supposed to be. When is he going to be healthy and when is he going to be ready to play? I think the Bills will be pretty eager to get him back when they can because of how different he is than the other options.
Joe, the All-22 of that Bucs game, how much can you get out of that? Like, what comes out of that for you when you're looking at let's talk defense and Cole Bishop, who played quite a bit there. Like, the game against the Bears, he didn't play that many snaps, but we came out of that with some big concerns. The Bucs game, he plays more, makes some plays. How much can be taken from an All-22 in a game like that where it's, you know, a lot of backups?
Well, for me, it was a very focused All-22 watch where there were a handful of players that you knew were going to make the team that were playing, and I wanted to get eyes on them. Cole Bishop obviously being one, the young defensive lineman, Tyrell Shavers. And then from there, it was really what can I pay attention to in terms of who's playing, when they're playing, and who they're playing with. And, you know, you were able to kind of uncover that, well, you know, Dane Jackson's playing the first three quarters of this game. He might not stick around. And then, of course, he was released. But what I can appreciate specifically about Cole Bishop, because I feel like that's where you will want me to take this answer,
is
I think Bobby Babbage did a good job of isolating him in situations and demanding him to be aggressive. And so you saw early in the game, they play him kind of as an apex defender, kind of an overhang. And he's, I guess you would even call it maybe like a tight aligned slot. And they send him through the A-gap, give him a chance to go run blitz and go attack the football. And he makes a nice tackle. And then they have a third down play and they show a too high safety look. And at the snap, they rotate into cover one. And now Cole Bishop becomes this hole defender, right? This rat in the hole where he's responsible to clean up things over the middle. And they get this slant route that Bishop perfectly drives on and disrupts at the catch point and incomplete pass on third down. And then you saw him kind of play from depth and make some physical tackles as well in 12 snaps. I mean, it's a lot. So I think they did a good job of exposing him a little bit and saying, hey, like, go make the play or don't. And he did. And I think it was really good growth week over week. And I still think that I'm not denying that Cole struggled against the Bears, but can we be honest? The guy missed like several weeks of practice. He gets in tossed into a joint session and then he plays on Sunday and he's playing with backups. You know, I don't know that it was a great showcase opportunity, but what the Bills have done is leverage that into a, hey, you better make sure your pencil's sharpened here with kind of the messaging that they had. And I think he responded really well. And I think he'll be your week one starter and obviously hoping to see him continue to grow and develop into the player they drafted him to be in the second round.
Joe Marino, the Locked On Bills podcast and Bill Squad Show. You can find those on YouTube where we are streaming our show as well. You can find them at wherever you get your podcasts as well. Joe, thanks again.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you having me.
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast.
Also, by the way, he's gone now, but he just launched his new website, thejoemarino.com. So you can get all his stuff there and all the links to everything. So
he is one of the hardest workers. Joe Marino, Sal, you know, you got people that putting out tons of Bills content, doing a great job. All right, when we get back, I got a very, very fast game. I'm just going to mention a name.
Okay.
A name.
One name.
Just to see the look on your face. That's it. All right, I teased the game. Very fast game. The game is I say a name.
Yep.
And you just react. All three of you can. Ready?
Okay.
Here's the name. Josh Norris. Remember that guy?
Yes.
I remembered him because the Sabres tweeted out pictures of players and their dogs.
And there was a Norris.
Norris. I'm like, oh, yeah.
I did see that.
Josh Norris.
Yeah. Yeah, remember that guy. Their number one center and highest paid forward.
That's what I'm saying. Like, yeah. What a strange little time we live in. Quick Sabres thing. Their highest paid forward. You have to
remember he's on the team.
Oh, yeah, that guy. It could be a big path for them to be better. Really could. I know people don't, and I hesitate to ever talk about them, you know, actually succeeding and getting better, but remember that guy?
Yeah.
You might say you don't remember because he played, game?
It was three games,
I think. Yeah. But he exists.
Yeah.
All right, how was the game? Was it fun?
No.
I mean, Owen made a noise. He went,
no.
All right, fine. I'll try again.
Dylan Cousins is getting these workout videos. Looking
it's be a new game. We'll
40 pounds
be the,
more.
Be the name bigger. Game, right? Just drop a name just to see what reaction we get.
The name game. I like it. Name.
Josh Norris. All right, 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. Jeremy and Joe on WGR.